Hey everybody, welcome to today's Brexit podcast. Now, some of you may know, myself and Jen are both journalists and our day job is to work at the Times and Sunday Times, and also we do a little bit for The Sun from time to time. So today we've got a returning guest, and he's one of our colleagues here at News UK, one of the deep thinkers on the staff. There's not that many of them, believe me, and that's Mr. Dave Bromwich. Dave was joined us before Christmas when he was apoplectic with rage about what was happening with Brexit, to the point where he'd actually abandoned Labour completely and he was set to join the Liberals. So with now he's a fully paid up member, I wanted to get him back on the show to see what he thinks. Everybody, welcome to the Brexit podcast. We're joined by our guest today, Mr. David Bromwich. He's been a previous guest on the show when we were ranting about everything Brexit, weren't you?
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, and we wanted to get you back on because it's a proper state of the nation job today. There's been so much happening in the news in Brexit. We don't have any proper guests, so Dave, we've got you.
And we've got I'm an everyman, I like it.
You really are. And we've got my lovely co-host, Jen Han as well. First question, when I talked to you last time, which was a few months ago, you were about to join the Liberal Democrats. Have you now achieved that aim?
I have joined the Liberal Democrats, yeah. I've joined. I'm happy with the way things are going.
Yes.
With that party.
Yeah.
At the moment, I think they're still providing the only real opposition.
Any developments for Brexit at all? Are they still driving to have another referendum?
The big thing about, we want another referendum to clarify, I think that's been quietly dropped. But they do, they want more of a say. They want more the public to have another say in the matter about the terms rather than another in-out referendum, definitely. I fully agree with that.
I saw Nick Clegg was having a bit of a barbed comment about the Department for Exiting the EU saying there's not enough staff and they're all short-staffed. So we haven't actually got enough people to carry out the complex negotiations that we're heading into.
But that was always going to be the case. We haven't had these people. Yeah, we've got not enough of the negotiators to make these trade deals with the other major nations that we're apparently going to do, and the world's going to be fine and dandy. The US, Canada, they've all got experts, huge masses of these people who negotiate these trade deals, and we haven't got the civil servants to do that. We haven't got the numbers, just because we've been in the EU for so long.
It's quite worrying, that, isn't it, when you think we haven't actually got the negotiating skills. We have been on the hunt to try and get an expert negotiator on the show, so if anybody has any expert negotiators or negotiation tactics, then maybe they could give us a shout and get in touch with us. My negotiation tactics on recruiting someone hasn't been that great so far.
No, I mean, yeah, the government should be saying the same thing. I think there should be massive billboards saying, can you negotiate? Have you got any negotiating skills whatsoever? Because we're a bit stuffed.
Okay, so we're stuffed on that. Now,
yeah.
The Parliament, well, the government might be feeling a bit stuffed at the moment with what's going on with in the House of Lords, where they've kind of thrown it back to them and said that we need to have a vote on the,
well, isn't it, the final decision. Isn't it disgraceful that the Lords have defied the government and have demanded that Parliament has some sovereignty back? Well, hang on, I thought that was what we were meant to be voting for in the first place. This is a case where, yeah, the government just wants to railroad whatever it wants through. It's ridiculous.
Jen?
Yes, I found it quite funny that it was the House of Lords, of all things, that pushed back on this.
Yes.
Yeah. Absurd to me.
Is it? I mean, what's it going to do, though? Just delay the process slightly?
I think it will. I think Corbyn's Labour are just going to march stride for stride with whatever the Conservatives want, and it'll go through with a hard Brexit, whatever. But at least there's going to be a vote on it. At least there will be discussions that the public can see.
Mm.
We can pick it apart if necessary.
Mm. Because the argument was that they were going to give us a bum deal in the knowledge that we then take it back because we have to vote on it, and then Theresa May has to go back cap in hand to the EU and say, oh, actually, can we have a better deal? And then the whole thing looks a massive shambles, and then we just get royally stiffed.
I think the time for it to worry about it looking like a massive shambles has passed, hasn't it? I think it's been that way for quite a while.
You mentioned that you think the Lib Dems are the only real opposition party. Do you think that opinion is reflected in the rest of British society as well?
I think so. I don't know exactly, I got an email from Tim Farron this morning, not personal, but that said that the Lib Dems have doubled their membership, I think, since their lowest ebb in 2012, membership wise.
Right.
And since then, that's up to 85,000.
Did everyone desert after the coalition was formed? Is that the sense?
Possibly, right. Yeah. But so they've gained about 40 odd thousand since 2012.
Okay.
30 odd thousand of that since the referendum. And mainly Labour supporters who are just so
disenfranchised
with Corbyn's and McDonald's view on Brexit.
Yeah. Were you a Labour man originally?
I've voted Labour in the past, but I've never really identified as a Labour vote, a Labour man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that necessarily. I've been on centre left, so kind of Lib Dem has always kind of been a nice fit for me anyway.
Yeah. Lib Dems just don't have enough seats to wield any power.
No, this is the sad thing. But there is a Lib Dem bounce back, as we talked about last time, I think, and there's more and more of these council by elections, certainly, where there's massive swings Lib Dem wise.
Mm.
And we've seen it on, I've forgotten her name now, Sarah Olney in Richmond. Obviously, that was a huge, not a turning point, but it was a huge moment for the Lib Dems in that we can use Brexit as a bargaining, you know, to really get some momentum behind us. Momentum with Labour is not such a good thing, but
no. Well, there's been a couple of curious by-election results, hasn't there?
Yes, absolutely.
For what's going on with Labour and then UKIP also seem to be in quite a pickle with everything.
That's a shame.
I suppose one way of dealing with it is as Phil Hammond did in the budget the other day, and with Brexit clearly the biggest thing on the horizon. Just don't mention it at all.
Not a word. Just ignore it completely. It'll go away. Massive elephant standing behind him.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think they're aware that Brexit polls badly. They're kind of being briefed. Don't mention it if you don't have to.
Yeah,
it's fairly obvious it's going to be a disaster. Apparently, I was reading about this Britain Thinks, who they've done this thing where they've got 100 people who are representative of the country as a whole and how they voted, asked them to keep Brexit diaries and what they've...
Right, okay. And
then answered. They had a big thing yesterday where they answered questions, had a Q&A session. And, yeah, apparently, certainly amongst leavers, optimism is through the roof about how great it's going to be after we've left.
Yeah,
I see no evidence for this. No.
It's
completely misplaced.
Trump, that's basically what it's like over there as well. All the lefties are freaking the hell out, while everyone else on the right is just like, "Yeah, this is great. He's doing exactly what he promised to do, even though he's not technically." But it's exactly the same thing, isn't it?
The thing is, they're so. It's all based on immigration as well. This is the thing that Britain thinks.
The 100 people.
The overriding thing was the optimism was down to the fact, once we've sorted immigration out, everything will be fine. Brexit's a silver bullet.
Mm.
And again, the point has to be made that this country, the dirty little secret is this country needs immigration. 100% needs certainly immigrants of a working age, because you've got The thing we've tax and national insurance contributions, all this, it's all paid in because you need money for the population in their early formative years to educate them and keep them safe, whatever, and you need money towards the end of their lives for people who've been retired and to get their pensions. And the great thing about immigrants coming in is they come in after their children, so they don't take out in education so much, and they quite often go home after they finish working.
Mm.
So it's a win-win. And the problem with the immigration fears that people have had is mainly because the government, successive governments, not just the Conservatives, have failed systematically to put in place the infrastructure where it's needed, where there's most immigration.
Yeah.
If they put in the infrastructure, then immigration benefits everybody.
It's an interesting line that I hadn't actually considered, the idea that people come in after schooling age and then leave before retirement. But when you put it like that, and I guess from the right they'd argue there's no evidence for that.
I think there is evidence for that.
Right.
I'd have to dig it out, but yeah. I'm confident I'd find it.
Yeah. Certainly when we had his name escapes me, but the guy from Cornwall Reports, the journo down there, he'd set up the news report from Cornwall. He was saying that he was worried about the fears for the daffodils down in Cornwall because it's the early bloomers down there. And he said you just get armies of migrant workers come and pick those every year. And he was just wondering what was actually going to happen there because it was the county's predominantly full of, there's a lot of retired folk there.
Yeah.
And so who's actually, you know, and it's a problem because it's an industry there for them.
And you, so there's a large percentage, say about 20%, looking at some of the polls I've seen. There was an LSE poll about how much would you be willing to pay to reduce a certain amount of immigration, and I think it came out most people would prefer not to pay anything at all and keep immigration as it was. They want hard Brexit as long as they don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And there was a certain percentage of people, possibly about 20% around that level, who were willing to take a 5% or more financial hit on their income to get immigration down to zero.
Yeah.
And immigration down to zero would be disastrous for this country. And you're not allowed to call those people racist and or stupid, but not because they're not racist or stupid, but because the argument goes, if you call racist and stupid people racist and stupid, they ignore you, they shut down and won't listen to what else you have to say.
Yeah.
I had this discussion this morning. Someone said, you can't call them racist and stupid, even if they're racist and stupid, because...
Well, this was...
They said, well, what is your purpose of calling them racist or stupid? Is it to feel superior, or is it to change their racist and ill-informed views? And I said, well, it's neither, really. I'm despairing. I'm just in desperation that people think like this. I would love to change their views, but it's not. You say people will listen to the first bit there about how immigration benefits, and if you're thinking, oh, I'll take a 5% hit in my wages so that no foreigners come into this country, you're not going to be swayed by the fact. But no, it benefits you, honestly. They'll only start to learn when they have to work till 75, 80 to cover because there's not enough money for their pensions. I think that's, and even maybe not even then. But.
Just, you know, sort of using their sort of racist, stupid language, rightly or wrongly, it's quite divisive. Now, I wanted to talk about the current kind of tactics, I suppose. It seems like a very hardball tactic that Theresa May's government's employing at the moment in terms of guaranteeing the rights of Europeans in this country. And then for a sort of quid pro quo to British citizens abroad. And this thing of not actually going to give any guarantees right now. And, you know, I'm interested to know, is that really the best negotiating tactics? Or would it be better to come out with a bit of an olive branch and say, absolutely, of course, we want people that have been established in this country, European citizens, we want to give them the peace of mind that they can stay here on time. And likewise, that would then, the Brits abroad would not feel that they're pawns caught in a political game, and actually this would help the two sides come together and start a dialogue which can then move on into other areas. But it feels rather that we're just abrasive to one another.
I totally agree with that. The government, Theresa May and the Brexit department, seems to be inherently distrustful of their European counterparts. And I think it's maybe mainly projection, bearing in mind how much backstabbing we've seen since June 23rd in that department with Gove and Boris and all those people. None of them trust each other.
No.
And so they, maybe I'm biased, but I see Europe, or the people in charge of Europe, certain people in Europe, as a lot more trustworthy than them. They're saying, we can't guarantee the rights because we can't trust Europe to not be complete dirtbags. Like we're not going to promise not to be complete dirtbags, but it depends on Europe. I can't see a situation where Europe will say, no, Brits must go back to Britain, or even, I don't even see the Tories saying, right, let's kick out the foreigners, that's not on. So yeah, you're right, why not have an olive branch? Why not just take the first step? Europe could come out and say that we will guarantee. They could take the first step, maybe. But I don't think it's their position to have to offer olive branches at the moment. It's Britain have taken the Brexit. We're taking our ball home.
We should make the first move.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's the case.
The EU Brexit chief, Guy Verhofstadt, the former Belgian Prime Minister, he has come out with a line that British citizens should individually request freedom of movement. I mean, that seems...
This is what I mean. This is an olive branch. This is amazing.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, the idea that people have to go and independently request it, and then if you don't request it, you don't get it. And, I mean, isn't this just smacks of, you know, swathes of red tape and logistical nightmare, isn't it?
Potentially. But it is an olive branch. It's given me some hope that...
Or maybe it's just a deterrent to the government to be like, we will offer them this and there's going to be a shit ton of paperwork, so you best just guarantee them the rights straight up, rather than us having to go through this back door. Mm.
It's a weird one, because I read that this morning and I felt, oh, yeah, Guy Verhofstadt is actually standing up for the 48%, far more than anyone on the British side is. I feel completely let down by my country's government / parliament, the whole of parliament. Mm.
Not sure you're much more optimistic than we were when you were invited.
No. Well, I kind of, when you invited me on, I'd kind of let it go for a bit. And I thought, oh, I better gen up a bit more. And then, yes, now I've become a bit more of a seething.
Gina Miller's back in court soon. We've got her on as a guest coming up again.
She's excellent.
Taking the court, I imagine you're a fan. And
I have a great deal of respect for Gina Miller. I think she's taken a horrific amount of abuse.
Mm. Now, we should say she's the one that led the charge to Article 50 go before Parliament, and a decision there, wasn't it, had to be made. So yeah, that's the background, and now she's pushing another court case through, which is similar to what the Lords would have kind of for that amendment.
Yeah, so I mean, she's fighting quite rightly for democracy and Parliament to have sovereignty. Mm-hmm. This is the embarrassing thing, is that for months and months up into the run up, we're saying we must regain our sovereignty, and now government saying we're going to go through Parliament saying we don't want our sovereignty, really. Government can do what they like. So I'm all for Gina Miller making it as difficult as possible, to be honest. Mm.
And did you hear Michael Heseltine speak the other day?
I did, yes.
Yeah. It's interesting that he was thrown out by the whips, didn't he, for not following the party line.
Yeah.
And said that he'd been sacked, and he'd never actually spoken to Theresa May, which I found quite...
Yeah,
absurd in a way.
Yeah.
Thought so. Just not even to say hello.
But it's interesting to see how so many people on the right now really turning against Heseltine, who was a great Thatcherite hero in the 80s, and that's ruffled a few feathers that he's for Brexit or not for Brexit, or certainly he's put a spanner in the works.
It is interesting times. Northern Ireland's no less interesting. You following that?
I am, yes. It's a concern, isn't it? I think I can see a point where we Northern Ireland leaves the Union. I can see a point where Scotland are going to leave the Union. And then in that future, we're a bit of a rump UK, aren't we?
Mm. I mean, Sinn Féin's got its foot in the door as much as it ever has now.
I think it's the first time in almost a century, is it, that the unionists don't have a majority in the government? I think that's about right.
That could be a third election in a year if they don't come up with an agreement and then becomes rule from Westminster once more.
It's just an omni-shambles, as I say. It's just...
Good word.
It's depressing.
I think you came up with another good word last time you were here, but I can't remember what it was now.
Somnambulistically, I
guess. That was the one.
That's meant sleepwalking into oblivion, yeah.
Yeah. Which we still are, I guess, in this whole episode of Brexit. Dave, great to have you back on.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
That's all for today, folks. The show's been brought to you by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming and Warren Pohl, and the theme music by Kevin MacLeod. For all things Brexit podcasts, go to brexitpodcast.com.